Don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, and along with Matt Dillahunty and Hello. Russell Glasser.
Hiya.
And we're coming to you live from the Dillahunty Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 6th of November.
And thus endeth the intro.
And thus endeth the intro. I don't know even Dennis, I don't even know who sang that thing.
You're disappointing your legions of fans,
I am,
Dennis.
I am. I know. I will get back to it.
This is what happens when you let Dennis have a whole bunch of time off. All right.
Gotta go crack the whip.
That's harder. Right. Nothing happens.
Well, I'm going to skip past the announcements, and we'll put all our news on hold because we actually have a special guest.
Yeah, that's right. I mentioned a few weeks ago that we would be having a mystery guest on the Nonprofits, and a lot of people in our audience probably follow the intelligent design movement pretty avidly and are familiar with the work of Michael Behe, who is a biochemist who writes that biochemical processes are much too complex to have evolved. Behe is a devout Catholic and an advocate for intelligent design. And about a month ago, his son Leo surprised a lot of people by coming out on Reddit saying that he was an atheist. And I believe Leo is on the phone right now. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome.
Going.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your religious background?
Yeah, I was raised pretty standard Catholic, and it was all just kind of part of my lifestyle. I went to church every week, didn't really question it, never really had a problem with it up until. You know, I was 17 or so. You know, I wouldn't say it was that extreme, you know, in any way. You know, it just wasn't really, it was the only view that was really offered. So it was kind of something that I just accepted along with any other subject I was taught by my parents.
And how old are you now?
I actually just turned 20, October 30th.
All right.
What happened at 17? A lot of Christians like to ask, oh, did some horrible life-changing event make you turn away from God and become an atheist, right? I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah. A lot of people tend to think that it was, you know, the result of some emotional experience, that, you know, something happened to make me angry at God or something. Actually, at the time... I was actually very happy with God. I was actually going out and getting a few books from the library to try to better defend my Catholic faith. So I thought I should go and get some books against Christianity and see how best I could refute their claims.
Oops.
And the first one I picked up was a classic, The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins.
Is that already a classic? I feel old. Seems like that just came out.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't have been my dad's first choice of a book, but...
Did you tell him that you were looking into this stuff?
At that time? Not at first. Of course, at first I didn't think that much of it. I thought I was just going to read them, say, okay, well, this is why he's wrong, and then return the book. But that was the book that kind of planted the first seeds of doubt. And then as I looked into it more, over, I'd say, a period of about 6 months, I just gradually lost my faith as I looked at it more and more and kind of saw the evidence against my faith and I kind of realized for the first time that there wasn't much in the way of credibility in terms of something like the Bible.
What pro-religion books were you reading, if any?
I actually read I read some C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. I read all sorts. I read several books that we have. One, I actually forget the name, but it was yes, it was called The Last Superstition. It was kind of a refutation of the new atheism. So, you know, just to be fair, I read that too, but I actually had a much easier time pointing out the logical fallacies in that than I did in The God Delusion.
Okay. Looks like that's by Edward Fezzer.
Yeah.
That's what Google says, anyway.
Do you feel you were misinformed about the atheistic arguments and things like evolution?
Yeah, it's not that I was told kind of given false information about them. I just never really was informed about them in the first place.
Oh.
You know, I always just kind of considered for a surprising amount of time, you know, I didn't really question my dad. I just kind of figured that he was right, and I never I was always 17 or so bothered to look into atheistic arguments at all.
You know, that's interesting because I read Darwin's Black Box, your father's sort of staple book, about 4 years ago. And at the time I was reading it, I got the strong impression that among the intelligent design people, he was the one who was basically most accepting of evolutionary arguments. In fact, I've got a quote that I copied down from early in the book. It says, "For the record, I have no reason to doubt that the universe is the billions of years old that physicists say it is. And furthermore, I find the idea of common descent, that all organisms share a common ancestor, fairly convincing. And I have no particular reason to doubt it. I greatly respect the work of my colleagues who study the development and behavior of organisms within an evolutionary framework. And I think that evolutionary biologists have contributed enormously to our understanding of the world." But, I don't know, did he give you that impression? Or you're saying he didn't talk about it much?
Yeah, you know, most of the work he did, I probably wouldn't have understood anyway at the time. But yeah, you know, he as I said, he never came off as too extreme or anything. You know, he's pretty reasonable. Basically, you know, the main point of his book was essentially the one that I took away from it. Just the fact that evolution was, you know, intelligently guided, you know. So, yeah, the subtleties of it didn't really bother me too much, and they don't really bother him too much, you know, as long as a creator factors in somewhere there.
Sure, he's found a place where he's comfortable kind of injecting his idea of God, I think.
Yeah.
This is Matt, by the way. You know, I didn't come from a Catholic background, but I did. You know, I was a Christian for many, many years, and you know, was over 30 by the time I actually came out as an atheist, and I had interactions with my family afterwards that strained relationships, and I know a bunch of other people have as well. And if it's not too intrusive, you know, since you've recently kind of come out with this, has it been relatively easy for you? I mean, because your dad's an intelligent guy, and you're saying that, you know, by and large, this hasn't been a big deal for him, the science and evolution of it. So I was wondering if, you know, if there was headbutting going on or great conflict, or if it was just a little easier.
Without going into too much detail, I could say there's definitely a lot of friction. I mean, I think most of it, I don't think my parents have that much of a problem with it. You know, they think I'm wrong, and they think I'm, you know, not, I don't have the right belief or lack of belief, but they accept that. The only real point where we kind of have a bit of friction is just the fact that, you know, I haven't moved out yet, so there are young and impressionable minds listening, you know, my younger siblings, and so it's more that it's a topic, you know, that I would do best not to discuss around the house.
Yeah.
What would happen if you did?
You know, well, what I said on my blog, you know, is that...
You want to give out that blog address, by the way?
Excuse me?
Do you want to give out that blog address?
Which address? Sorry.
Your blog. You just said you had a blog?
Oh, yeah. It's Salty914, Salty with capital S, S-A-L-T-Y, 914. Anybody wants to look at it.
What, on Reddit, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, Reddit.com. Okay, so go to Reddit.com and then look for user salty914. Okay, go on.
Yeah, you know, if I do talk about it with my siblings, that's kind of a no-no, and I generally lose some contact with my siblings if I talk about it with them with an attitude that is at all critical of religion.
You're the oldest?
I actually have three older siblings. I'm about in the middle. I've got five younger siblings, so
yeah,
a little above the middle.
So you're in the position where, you know, you're out, but you're living at home, and in an interest to kind of keep the peace, and, you know, it's best for you not to be so vocal and basically cause trouble at home.
Yeah, I find it best, you know, I can talk with people online, or I can talk with adults about it, and
well, that
as long as I don't bring it up at home.
That was the question I was getting to. One of the things we end up getting a lot in email are people who are in situations similar but not identical to yours, where they are essentially the lone atheist surrounded by theists in their family, and they don't have much of a support group. And, you know, we have the Atheist Community of Austin here in Austin, where we have lots of events and people can come and talk, so there's always some place to go and somebody to hang out with. What have been, I mean, has your outlet and your support network for this been primarily online, or are you, you know, active or involved in any local groups in your area?
I would say that it's primarily online. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say I don't know anybody personally, you know, who supports me, but the vast majority of people I know are Christians or theists, so it's most definitely the most positive response I got was online, mostly on Reddit when I made the blog post, because, yeah, you feel, this definitely happened to me too, you feel a little alienated once you come out as an atheist, because pretty much everybody I know does think I'm wrong, and I'm always being either told I'm going to hell, which happened several times in the past few weeks, or, you know, less extreme, you know, people are just constantly prodding me to open my heart to God and, you know, let him talk to me.
Do you have any perspective on the way the Catholic approach to that differs from what we might experience out here in Texas with a bunch of Baptists, or do you mostly just exclusively talk to Catholics anyway?
I'd say the majority of the people I know are probably Catholic, but you know, I'm quite sure it's a little less extreme out here. Like, nobody has really viciously attacked me. You know, it's a little more moderate, because I've heard some stories about people in the Bible Belt and such that are, it's crazy how intense it can get.
In Tennessee and places like that. I was going to ask, as much grief as I will give the Catholic Church for all of the various things that I find absolutely appalling and offensive about what they're doing, especially, you know, hiding priests who are victimizing kids, they've generally been pretty good on evolution over the last 50 years or so, although that may or may not be changing. But one thing I found interesting is in the Dover trial, we had a Catholic, your father, on one side, and another Catholic, Ken Miller, on the other. And I wondered, apart from testimony, and, you know, I greatly respect Ken Miller's, you know, stance on evolution. I think he's wrong about the God thing. But I was wondering if there was, I don't know if you knew of conversations between the two of those. I mean, certainly you wouldn't probably during the trial. But do they, you know, is there a lot of engagement in, like, scholarly conversation about the differences within, you know, groups of Catholics? Because it seems that, you know, your Catholicism doesn't limit you in what you can and can't accept. So Ken Miller has gone this step further, I think, than your dad has, which is, you know, hey, I found a place for my God, and it doesn't have to be a debunking of, you know, common descent for humans as well.
Yeah, it's that whole opinion that I'm hearing more and more often, that science can't find God, or it, you know, you won't find evidence of God in science, and it's something that is completely relegated, you know, to the metaphysical. And, you know, I would be fine with that, because that's less religion trying to essentially push science out of the way.
But
you know,
but your father doesn't.
That, you know, science and religion can coexist easily. So, you know, I'm pretty much in agreement with that view as far as, like, accepting it. I have no problem with it.
Okay, but your father doesn't take that view of God, right? I mean, the whole point of writing The Black Box was to demonstrate that something about the discipline of microbiology requires a God to exist. And in that sense, he must believe that science actually can find God, right?
Yeah, you know, I would say so. I would say it's kind of going about it from the opposite angle. He's saying that these things cannot be explained without a God. So what he's kind of saying is there are still some gaps here that God needs to fill. And I think that's kind of the older approach. The put God in the gaps where science can't explain it yet. So he's essentially trying to use a lack of science or a lack of explanation for something. But as I have said before, and many other atheists, a lack of evidence for evolution does not bring God any closer to being real. That's just one more explanation of...
Yeah, I just answered an email a few minutes ago from a deist who was basically saying, well, I've seen science, you know, debunk all these things, but so far science hasn't debunked the idea of a creator. And I was just like, you know, that's a simple shifting of the burden of proof. There's something fundamental you don't understand if you think something's believable until it's been disproven. But, you know, moving away, I don't want to, I mean, obviously there's some sensationalism because of who you are and who your father is, but I don't want to just, you know, focus on your dad and your relationship with your dad and all that, those issues. I was wondering, you know, you obviously, your dad as a scientist, you were raised, I'm assuming, with some appreciation for science. Clearly, I think it came out in your, you know, research with the God delusion and other things. And you're 20 now, and I was wondering what your plans were. Are you, you know, considering science, or are you going a different direction?
I'm considering I'm thinking of taking some classes actually in writing at a nearby college probably next spring. The first thing I'm doing though is definitely moving out. I'm working full time right now, so I should be able to get an apartment in the next few months.
Well, that's good. Congratulations. Yeah. The economy sucks.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. It's not that great of a job, but it's a job. So, and I'm actually thinking about starting a blog sometime soon. I'll definitely put that online, you know, let people know about it once I do. But, yeah, essentially want to keep talking about this because it's such an interesting topic to me, you know, religion and the lack thereof and its effects, particularly its effects on children, you know, religious teaching, bringing up kids with religion.
Yeah, there's a – when we were at the Texas Freethought Convention, mm-hmm. there's a woman named Marlene Winnell who came to talk about something that she's dubbed as religious trauma syndrome because, you know, while your transition was – you know, rather moderate from what you've mentioned. And mine was stressful, but I was older and, you know, able to say, I was confident in who I was enough to say that, you know, if my friends and family stop loving me because I don't believe in the same, you know, imaginary things that I think they believe in, then I'm fine, you know, not having those relationships. I want relationships with people who, you know, care about me for who I am. And I was comfortable with that. There are a lot of people, though, who aren't, and they suffer tremendously, both with fears that have been instilled by religion, fears of hells and demons and things like this. There are people who in their 50s and 60s still wake up screaming in the night because of a fairy tale that somebody told them when they were a kid, because it's not like a grim fairy tale that you know is not true. It's something that's kind of pushed on you by people in positions of authority as if it were true. And the problems that these people endure not only relate to the specific teachings of religion that cause fear and guilt and anxiety, but when they've managed to escape those religious groups and those religious ideas, they are now faced with a loss of their entire social network. They lose all their friends and their family, and they don't have people they can connect with. And she's done a lot of work there in that area. And I'm glad that this is an area that, you know, you're looking into and looking to pursue, because it's, I agree, it's absolutely fascinating and essential. We need to be able to get better information to people who are leaving religious groups. And Daryl Ray has done that as well.
Yeah, yeah, I know personally some people whose transition from Christian or any other religion to atheist has been much rougher than mine, you know, and I think it is a very important topic because, you know, when one is a child, you know, their mind is so permeable, it's so easy to convince. A child will believe pretty much anything it's told, and that's why I find it, you know, at best, you know, taking advantage, at worst, you know, kind of a disgusting attempt to get to raise somebody essentially just with the aim of it being a clone, you know, of yourself, mm-hmm. teaching a child that without doubt, without question, this religion is right and they absolutely must believe it. Because, you know, even when somebody is an adult, And people have said, you know, it's okay because once they're adults, they can do whatever they want. It won't be that easy when they're adults to leave it because, I mean, as you said, even once they leave a religion, it'll stick with them essentially because their mind absorbs it when they're a kid, and it's not that easy to forget. I mean, I know people, and I still sometimes have a little bit of an instinctive fear of hell, you know, not because I believe in it, but just because it's something that I was raised with.
Yeah,
that gets easier, right?
Yeah.
This is why creating a mini-me is the province of Dr. Evil.
I do have one other question. I was wondering how much you've followed the intelligent design movement, and I'm also wondering if you've spent any time hanging out with sort of the other luminaries of the ID movement, like William Dembski, Jonathan Wells, Philip Johnson, those sorts of people.
Yeah, I don't follow the intelligent design movement too closely. I do have many friends who believe that, you know, either evolution was guided intelligently or simply did not happen. So I try to keep up on essentially, you know, things, arguments against evolution and whether or not evolution has dealt with them yet in a satisfactory way. But in regards to intelligent design, you know, I listen to my father's arguments, and then I read arguments against it, essentially. I keep up on what Richard Dawkins is doing, because he's definitely one of the best evolutionary proponents out there. So, you know, as long as evolution still is a credible theory, and I think it is very, you know, almost certainly true. You know, there's always a chance, but it's almost certainly true.
Right.
And I'll accept that essentially as the correct theory, you know, because I trust all of essentially almost every scientist in the world, you know, except for the few who still believe that it was religiously guided.
Which kind of brings me to a question that I think's, you know, painfully obvious, and that is, you know, obviously you no longer believe, and your parents are aware that you no longer believe. I was wondering, in the conversations about coming out, how did you and your dad kind of debate at all the science of it in discussing this, or was this just kind of shrugged off to the side?
Actually, I talked about it, but not necessarily about the specific, you know, evolutionary science involved. I debated since I'm much more knowledgeable in essentially the more the God, no God question. We've debated that a lot. Not on the grounds, though, really, of intelligent design.
Sure, you didn't have to dig into
the full job. I leave that up to people like, you know, Richard Dawkins, who know the science much better than me.
So he didn't throw stuff like flagella at you?
No, I had heard that argument before, and I've also heard it refuted as well, so...
Now, a lot of people who deconvert say that the reading the Bible had a lot to do with their leaving the fold. And I was wondering if you have read the Bible or subsequently read it after becoming an atheist to any effect.
Yeah, I've read a lot of stuff from the Bible now that I am an atheist, and kept a little more of a little more of an unbiased perspective, and it's quite shocking, really. I also hear a lot of people who say that, you know, reading the Bible had more of an impact on them becoming an atheist than the God delusion, you know, because, you know, as soon as you stop believing, which I think is one of the most extraordinary leaps of faith, that all of the, you know, slaughtering and raping and conquering that the Israelites did in the Old Testament was somehow part of a loving plan, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult to visualize.
That, you know, it was loving for them, but apparently not for all of the tribes that they were killing off, you know. As soon as you stop believing that's part of a loving plan, it looks a lot more like, you know, like an abomination. Looks a lot more like somebody very angry. Not, you know, if I read that without ever having heard of the Christian faith before, the idea of a loving God, I certainly wouldn't say, oh, wow, this guy really loves people. I would say he has
issues.
Some anger issues, apparently. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us today. I hope our listeners have enjoyed hearing from Leo Behe. And I hope you'll continue to listen to our podcasts and stuff. And thanks for spending some time with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Any chance your father is going to wind up hearing this? Or is he going to avoid
any chance we could have him on?
Oh, yeah.
No. If you get your blog up, or if you get any more writing endeavors out, you know, please don't hesitate to let us know. You can come back on and pimp your work a little bit, and
yeah,
we'll be glad to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, y'all. I'll let him know. I'll ask him.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks
see
much.
You.
All right. See you later.
Bye-bye. All right.
Very well-spoken young man.
That was entirely Russell's little coup there. It was supposed to happen last week, or 2 weeks ago when we were on. But there were phone issues, and they've since been resolved. So
you can also credit Linnea, who reads Reddit all the time. So she was the first one to notice that he was on there, even before Feringula did. So... it's been a week.
It's been 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, and one of those weeks...
Had an election in it.
Had an election in it.
Yes. And a Halloween.
Yeah. I went out and got my vote on.
I voted.
I voted early.
I don't think a single person I voted for won.
Lloyd Doggett won. I got to vote for him.
I don't think I get to vote for Lloyd.
No, because thanks to Tom DeLay's redistricting... Lloyd Doggett is like part of extreme South Austin and San Antonio, I think.
Oh, good grief.
but
Jerry,
you
know. Stop Mandarin.
So one of the things let Beth have your microphone so she can tell us her joyful news.
Ooh.
That she was overjoyed with about the Colorado vote.
Okay.
Clunk, clunk.
Well, as we mangle the microphone to get it to her.
The personhood amendment was defeated.
Woo! Whoa. What was that?
So, abortion, birth control, IVF, stem cell research is all still legal in Colorado.
Yeah, it was an attempt in Colorado to assign personhood to the fetus.
No, not even the fetus. To fertilized eggs.
A zygote? Oh. Wow.
It's crazy.
What is the penalty for the very large number of births that wind up spontaneously aborting? I mean...
reckless endangerment, obviously.
Well, the thing is, if you assign it personhood, then it doesn't necessarily have to be a penalty, but wouldn't we have had to track all of those statistics so we could get the number of deaths per year. And so in Colorado, the number of deaths per year
would shoot up through the roof.
And of course, that with the birth rate remaining constant, it would look like Colorado's population was rapidly decreasing rather than just their IQs.
Well, no, because they would be treated as born and then died almost immediately. And but, I mean, I wonder if police cases would have to go up because, I mean, isn't the general procedure that even if somebody seems to die naturally, you've got to investigate it to make sure it wasn't a murder?
Yeah.
So what do they put on a birth certificate?
It was a jobs creation movement.
Do they have a conception certificate? I mean.
So I didn't have any issues when I went to go vote. I went. I wore my ACA T-shirt. We voted at the local Northwest Fellowship Church just a quarter mile from me. And there are a lot of churches that serve as polling places. It's one of the things that I go back and forth on. On the one hand, it's the one time that we know a church is actually doing something that benefits the public, that benefits the area in which it leeches.
A church is finally doing a secular service.
Yeah. And, you know, there should be very strong restrictions, limitations on what can happen. They need to make sure that, you know, they're not proselytizing when you come in to vote. Mm-hmm. And the area needs to be clear of, you know, a lot of religious paraphernalia.
I had it easy. I voted at Randall's. And then when I went to pick up Ben at school on Tuesday, it was crowded with voters. So, you know, that's good. It's a state building anyway, so it makes sense.
So one thing that happened, Lauren Rose went to go vote, and she made a homemade T-shirt that on the front said, "Liberal anti-theist, voting in a church, really? This is the United States, right?" And on the back, it had a cross with the circle with the slash through it that said, "No peace in law, no peace in life, unnecessary in civil society." It was a big anti-Christian, anti-theistic statement. What she wrote, and I'll just read this because she's going to tell it better than I could. "As soon as I walked, I was approached by this old woman who at first was nice and saying good morning, but quickly became an enemy once she read my shirt. She got all bug-eyed and asked me to turn it inside out. And I said, 'No, I don't think I will. Can I vote now, please?' She left me standing there and brought over two other people, another old woman and a middle-aged man. I was asked again to turn my shirt inside out or put on a jacket and to, quote, be respectful in this place. Again, I said, 'I don't think so. This may be a church, but for now it's an election polling site and has no religious affiliation whatsoever. This is not your God's house right now. He can have it back later. Now please let me vote so that I might try and keep places like this from being polling sites in the future.' After just a little bit more argument, I was finally..."
I can't imagine why that caused a scuffle.
"Yeah. After a little more argument, I was finally led to the voting area for my precinct. There were about five people in front of me. It was going to take a while. I remained rather still and fairly quiet so I could hear what was happening behind me. The old woman who had met me at the door, along with another old woman who she'd retrieved later, were behind me talking about my shirt. And then one of them said, 'It's time to pray. Let's pray for her.' And they prayed quite loudly behind me. They prayed for nearly 10 minutes as I stood there. And as soon as my booth opened, I darted for it. I voted straight Democratic ticket. Then I quickly pushed a button to submit and got the F out of there." So after realizing that they couldn't force her to turn her shirt inside out or put on a jacket, they had to let her in line. And what they did was they stood behind her in line and for 10 minutes prayed loudly.
Cast magic spells. Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to immediately call for this church to no longer be a viable polling place because the church didn't necessarily do this. But the individuals who did participate in this, I don't care if they're volunteers.
They should not be election workers again.
Exactly. They should never be election workers again.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have any problems where I voted. But that doesn't mean there aren't problems. And here's a prime example of one.
Right.
Now, there are plenty of people who would say, well, you know, there wouldn't have been a problem if she hadn't have worn that T-shirt. Well, guess what? This is the United States of America. Free speech is protected. And that she was absolutely right. That polling place was not a church, was not in the purview management of the church.
Right.
It was at the time of the election. It was an official government secular voting place.
Mm-hmm.
Church loaned them a building.
Right.
If they don't like the fact that they're going to have to allow people in
that disagree with their religion,
then they have no business being a polling place.
Yep.
Yeah, this actually fits into sort of a larger story of something that's been going on for the last several elections, which is that under the guise of preventing voter fraud, groups of people have been basically committing an equally serious offense of voter intimidation, where basically there's this big trumped up story going around that lots of people are signing up under fake names or dead people are registering or whatnot. This cycle, I even heard about a case where some news commentators were loudly and indignantly naming names of people who were registered and dead. And then this guy had to call up and say, you know, I'm not actually dead. because he had been mentioned specifically. But, I mean, what this all is an excuse to, in many cases, go there and, under the guise of keeping elections clean, go there and push people around that look like, you know, their skin color isn't the sort of thing that you would like that person to be voting, or they're wearing an offensive atheist T-shirt to mm-hmm. you, and therefore they're probably not going to be voting for stuff you like. And that is absolutely illegal, and more ought to be done about that.
Yep.
Let's see. Another sorry for
go
that
ahead.
Gap. Oh, we are on the same webpage, and that's what happens when we both take our news from the same source.
That's all right. Go for it.
there was a mega church pastor in the last couple of weeks. His name's Jim Swilley, and he came out as gay. He's a pastor in Georgia.
Nothing wrong with that.
Swilley, 52, founded the church 25 years ago. He seemed the stereotypical picture of a pastor with four kids and a wife who doubled as his associate pastor. But Swilley said he's known he was gay since he was a little boy. He said his wife, Debbie, also knew his secret from the start. Swilley came out to his kids and his congregation. He said he knew he might risk everything, but the recent rash of gay teen suicides pushed him over the edge.
Wow.
As a father, thinking about your 16, 17-year-old killing themselves, I thought somebody needed to say something, Swilley said through tears. I know all the hateful stuff that's being written about me online. Whatever, Swilley said. To think about saving a teenager, yeah, I'll risk my reputation for that.
Well, pastor with a conscience.
Yeah. So,
what's remarkable about this story is that he actually did the honorable thing and came out without some kind of big scandal that was getting
right.
him caught.
He wasn't caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's some obvious. I mean, I'll give him full credit. He's doing the thing that we want everybody to be able to do,
right.
Because the bullying has gotten ridiculous. Dan Savage has started the It Gets Better.
Yeah, and program. I have to wonder if Jim Swilley was actually influenced, at least indirectly, by this campaign of raising awareness about it. So more props to Dan Savage.
Yeah.
Now you got to wonder though, before he came out, how did he offer rapidly homosexual sermons and such?
I have no idea. I will say that, you know, what we're still looking at here is an example of just how strong of a poison religion actually is. Because here's a guy who's known he was gay since he was a little kid, and because of his religious views, he's married with four kids and has been pretending until he's in his 50s. And to his credit, when he looked around and saw the damage that was being done, he at least came out and was honest about it. I'd be curious. I mean, you know, I hate to be the guy who says, who doesn't just applaud. I mean,
right.
I applaud
it's
him.
Okay.
But I yeah. want.
He's
I also
still a mega church pastor, which means yeah. we don't necessarily identify with him.
Yeah, I applaud him for what he did in the same way that I applaud Reverend Barry Lynn for fighting for church separation and everything else. But I'd love to actually get him on the phone and say, well, what is it that you actually believe about homosexuality? You know, is it? Are you do you go with the Bible? Is it an abomination? Do you yeah. hate yourself?
Are you an abomination? Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
is this why
you
you've been living
like
you
are?
Have you been, you know, have you been giving anti-gay sermons? You know, those types of things. There's lots and lots of questions I'd like to ask, mm-hmm. but mostly, I can't imagine the pain that this guy's had hiding who he is all these years.
Oh yeah,
and I don't imagine that it's going to change. I mean, if his wife has known his secret all these years, I can't imagine, you know, there's
any well word I mean on... talk about pain, what must she have been going through?
Yeah,
I mean,
any word on the reaction of the congregation?
Not yet. I haven't heard anything. One of the things that came out recently is this jackass in Arkansas, Clint McCants, who posted on his Facebook, they were having the Wear the Purple Day as a way of showing mm-hmm. empathy with those who had been bullied and beaten because they're gay. And he posted on his Facebook, he said, seriously, they want me to wear purple because five queers killed themselves. The only way I'm wearing it for them is if they all commit suicide. I can't believe the people of this world have gotten this stupid. We're honoring the fact that they sinned and killed themselves because of their sin. Really, people. And after being challenged on it, he said in a follow-up, no, because being a fag doesn't give you the right to ruin the rest of our lives. If you get easily offended by being called a fag, then don't tell anyone you're a fag. Keep that shit to yourself. I don't care how people decide to live their lives. They don't bother me if they keep it to themselves. It pisses me off, though, that we make a special purple fag day for them. I like that fags can't procreate. I also enjoy the fact that they often give each other AIDS and die. If you aren't against it, you might as well be for it. But wait. There's more.
God.
Somebody should tell Bill Donahue that if he gets offended by people making fun of Catholics, then you should just not tell anyone you're a Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, I would disown my kids if they were gay. They will not be welcome at my home or in my vicinity. I will absolutely run them off. Of course, my kids will know better. My kids will have solid Christian beliefs. See, it infects everyone. God. The superintendent came out and condemned him. Of course, you can't fire somebody based on, I mean, he's got every right to express this ridiculous bigotry. And, I would like to say to his credit, but I refuse to give him any credit. He did end up resigning. And I watched an interview with him with Anderson Cooper, I believe, where he apologized and he, you
wait,
know.
Wait.
I don't buy
it. Let me prognosticate what his apology sounded like. I'm sorry if I offended anyone.
No.
It was an actual apology?
Well, it's basically, it seemed clear to me that he had essentially been shamed into an apology.
Obviously.
I'm surprised he had a knowledge of shame.
He acknowledged that his comments were ignorant and born of ignorance, and that he was sorry that he'd said him, and that his views were not necessarily what he had expressed. I don't believe him. I think he's a fucking liar. I think
he's been coached.
I think he is a hateful little bigot. And he spoke his mind, figuring, hey, you know, I'm going to show my machismo. And he got caught. And now you're seeing the sorriness of somebody who got caught. I hope he has a change of heart on the subject. And I hope that someday he really realizes just what an ignorant fuck he really is. But going on, it turned into this big deal. And then he gets invited on Anderson Cooper. And, of course, he's going to apologize as best
right,
he can.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because now
I
at that point.
I want the nation to hate me.
At that point, he was getting death threats. And he had been, you know, once you become the target of everybody's hatred. And you're told by the people that you know and love that you are now a bad representative of us.
Right.
That'll change you.
And yeah, well, I want to say, do not send people death threats. I think that's terrible form. But at the same time, with all the talk that's been going on in the last few months, like partly stemming from Phil Platt's Don't Be a Dick speech and, you know, and other sort of more timid atheists or skeptics coming out and saying, you know, oh, don't be mean, don't ridicule people. This is the kind of thing where ridicule is absolutely called for and has an effect.
Yeah.
And it's not, and the point of ridicule is not to win over the guy, not to gain his apology, but to make it absolutely clear that sort of assholery is not appropriate in polite society.
Right.
And deserves ridicule.
Yeah. Man. It's like, but I suspect, you know, rather than a, you know, sincere apology, he talked to a guy who knew something about PR.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, cynically, but we'll see.
So there's a Gallup poll that says religious people have a higher, healthier life, I guess, have a higher well-being.
Well, they have a huge social network.
Yeah.
There's that.
Every Sunday.
That is the speculation for the biggest difference, because when you look at, they break it down, the difference between very religious and non-religious, very religious, moderately religious, non-religious, and they break it down by life evaluation index, which to me sounds like them evaluating how much they enjoy their life, which I would write off as blissful ignorance. I think mm-hmm. I think that among the non-religious people, you would have a better understanding, perhaps, because you are actually facing reality on reality's terms.
Yes.
With roughly how happy you are in relation to how happy you could be, you know, this whole idea of was I happier when I was a Christian? I certainly thought I was. But when I look back at it, I could see that I would have answered very highly.
Yeah.
Well, you're lucky, though. I mean, you've got, I mean, first of all, not all atheists can be hosts of an internationally popular television show. And I mean, you and I and Dennis, we all have a sort of supportive network of people we know mm-hmm. that right. enrich our lives.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, like, I mean, Leo just earlier mentioned,
right.
everybody around him thinks he's wrong and going to hell. And
yeah.
that's got to take its toll.
Yeah, I would imagine.
On some people.
I would imagine he is possibly less happy overall and would have answered less happy overall. But well, it doesn't have any – it's not – the link that some people are wanting to make is that religions make people happier because there's some truth to the religion. And I would argue that to the extent that religions do make people happier, it's because of secular reasons. You were talking
right.
about the social network,
yeah.
the fact that you're not ostracized, the fact that you're part of the majority.
And they can do the same
poll. You
don't
get people praying loudly at you yeah. in churches while you're trying to vote.
And they can do the same poll concerning pot or alcohol and get similar results, I'll bet.
Well, there is actually a quote that I've appreciated for many years by George Bernard Shaw that seems perfectly tailored to this study, which is, "The fact that a believer is happier than a skeptic is no more to the point than the fact that a drunken man is happier than a sober one."
Yep.
Yeah, so I think there's a combination of factors. I have no problem at all with, you know, the results. A lot of it is self-assessment. And, you know, when you ask somebody to assess how happy they are, you're going to get
right. some, a lot of factors.
Some of it's going to be accurate, and some of it's going to be limited by their understanding of happiness. And some of it's going to be, in the case of, for example, Mormons are coached to always answer
right.
questions like that with the highest happiness, no matter what they're actually feeling.
Yeah.
They are to give a particular image in order to benefit.
What you are expected to respond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, is that what the study did? It just asked people, how happy are you?
No.
Okay.
There were a number of different factors, life evaluation, emotional health index, physical health index, healthy behaviors index, work environment index, and then a basic well, access index.
Those but are it, impressive, but they don't actually tell
survey.
Us anything.
One at a time.
Oh, sorry.
But it was basically a survey for where people
yeah.
make their own answers.
I think that there may have been more to it than just, you know, well, when you're asking about people's health, yes, you are polling them on their health, but you know, the difference in health was not, well, I'm going to have to look at it, because the difference in health was the biggest one between very religious and non-religious. So we'll have to have to look into it some more. But in any case, if we were to find, as I've said before, let's keep everything that's good in religion or wherever we find it and get rid of the bad. If we were to find that being religious actually made people healthier and happier and better off, then what we need to do next is investigate and come to learn exactly why that is, because there's a number of reasons it could be. One, it could be because they're right and there's some God that is, you know, actually benefiting their life. And number two is that there is something about the social structure of religion that benefits their life. They could also be that the religious ideas skew their understanding and perception of their life and well-being. And it could be that there's deception involved. But this is a poll. And we have, on the other hand, in the Journal of Religious, I forget the name, the poll that we've cited about a bazillion times, where we actually measure religiosity versus societal health for real factors. Now, we're not polling people. We're actually going to find out what is your access to health care? How wealthy are you? You know, how... All of these different factors that go into the culture that you're living in. And what we find is that non-religious societies outscore, I mean, it's inversely.
So in other words, what you're saying is that non-religious people in this very religious society are generally unhappier, but societies that are less religious tend to be happier. Or at least... Or at least in some way healthier.
Healthier, that's the word.
Non-religious societies score better on measures of societal health. Right down everything from health care and you know, general well-being all the way down to lower rates of murder, et cetera.
Yeah, I think a big factor in it is that if you've got your religious faith, you don't have any self-doubt. And if you don't have any self-doubt, yeah, you're happier. You're hosed, but you're happier.
I don't know that religious people actually don't experience self-doubt. It's just that they work harder to suppress it. I mean,
or at least to present.
You remember, even Mother Teresa was not immune
from those
effects. And you know, when I listen to shows where Christians are talking to each other and giving each other advice, so no atheists involved. They also, a very frequent theme is, you know, I know I'm supposed to believe so-and-so, but it's hard sometimes.
Right.
And then the guy inevitably tells them, here, read this nice inspirational thing, which will make you feel better.
So, we're preparing our war on Christmas.
Yeah, gear up! Come on, man! Heart!
I'm preparing my war on Christmas by, we're going to book flight to go visit my family and exchange gifts and eat and things like that. I don't know what anybody else is doing, but that's my biggest plan for the war on Christmas.
No mercy!
All right, I've got the court-martial ready.
All right, but American Atheists is putting up their first billboard, and it's... Wow. I love it.
That's interesting.
I love it and I hate it a little bit, but I mostly love it.
it's definitely a new atheist sort of thing, isn't it?
It shows a little manger. It's all done in silhouette, a little manger with a donkey, and then what's obviously, you know, Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, and then three wise men on camels coming up and a big star above it. And the text says, you know it's a myth. This season, celebrate reason. Now,
ooh.
American Atheists, reasonable since 1963.
Epistemologically, I don't know that we're valid, you know, we're justified in saying we know it's a myth. I would say that we are convinced beyond measure.
Yes.
Well, I'm convinced beyond measure, but I don't think it would be a fair statement to say that everybody who sees this billboard will know it's a myth.
Right. Yeah. And so I could say I know it's a myth in the colloquial sense, but The average person seeing that billboard is going to be absolutely livid.
I'm afraid so.
Because here they are getting ready for Christmas, and you've got a big billboard up that's saying the birth of your savior story is a myth. I got to give him kudos for that. Dave Silverman.
Well, I mean, it takes some balls, yeah.
Well, at least it's not a poster of a guy pointing a gun at you.
Dave Silverman, though, did the right thing and pointed out that the billboard is targeting people who go through the motions of celebrating the holidays but don't actually believe in the Christ myth. Many people, this is a quote from him, many people follow religions and observe rituals in which they do not believe. They go along to get along, which simply leads to more prejudice and bigotry. Closeted atheists hurt themselves and others like them by remaining silent about what they know to be true. None of the traditional Christmas seasonal practices originate with Christianity. What we call Christmas has its origins in secular events like the winter solstice and the change of the seasons, as well as pagan holidays like Yule. This season was celebrated long before Christianity usurped it. And he's absolutely right. Though it's only one teeny, tiny little thing, a little caveat. And Dave, I love you, but I got to do this. Yes, the people who are going along to get along do hurt themselves and others by remaining silent. But we're not yet at the point where everybody can reasonably be vocal and out about their atheism. I wish we were. And I will encourage people who are comfortable in being out to be out. I'm all for the out campaign. But if you're in a position where you are convinced that your health, welfare, livelihood, you know, or just your general happiness is going to drop through the toilet if people know that you're an atheist, then you go ahead and you stay closeted, work behind the scenes. You can do things without ever letting anybody know, especially in this modern age of computers.
That's right. On the internet, no one knows you're a dog.
Not only can you make anonymous blog posts and things, but there are ways you can participate with atheist groups kind of on the sly. One of the things that we've done recently is we put out a candidate questionnaire to everybody, every candidate that Texans would vote on in this past election. And it was brought to my attention that one way to encourage participation, because not everybody wants to be on the show, one way to encourage participation is to get people involved in things like writing press releases, stuffing envelopes, all the things that you can do kind of anonymously behind the scenes. So you can help participate in making a world that is easier for you to come out in.
Right.
Yep.
Talking about another holiday that just passed. Linnea and I went to a hell house last week.
Uh-oh.
Wrote all about it on the blog, and Linnea actually wrote a longer, better post on her blog, everythingelseatheism.blogspot.com, that I encourage people to read. But to me, one of the more interesting parts of the trip was not going through the Hell House, which was largely the same as the first Hell House I went to, and you know, outrageous and annoying.
They've got their formula.
Yeah, they do have their formula. But it was meeting this guy behind us in line who, you know, from all outward appearances would seem to be a stereotypical Texan. He had, you know, a heavy accent. He was wearing a cowboy hat in line, and his kid's costume for Halloween was, you know, army fatigues.
Okay.
With a little toy gun. And we got to talking with him, and he... You know, it turned out he was ex-Army. He had some injuries, but he was also, he had a law degree. He was using his GI Bill to go after a master's degree and hopefully a PhD.
Wow.
He turned out to be a very interesting and intelligent guy that we spent some fun time standing in line with. You know, I was encouraged a bit to be able to sort of make joking offhand references to some of the stuff they were trying to do in Hell House. You know, just sort of not really coming right out and saying, I'm an atheist and this is all crap, but just being able to make sort of humorous, dismissive statements about their mission and have him agree with that stuff. And one thing I do think is that it's important for atheists not necessarily to come out if it's going to be a danger to them, but to help subtly foster an atmosphere in which people are okay with not just genuflecting to religious messages and going along with whatever they say. Subtle, subtle ridicule.
Yeah.
If the show goes downhill now, it's because we've been distracted by a kitty.
Yes, who's pointing her ass at my microphone.
A kitty cat has come in and leapt onto the table.
There she goes.
All right.
But everything's better with animals.
So among the good news, and this also relates to the coming out or being out as atheist, secular student organizations on campuses is on the rise.
Hooray.
Good.
Organizations are on the rise.
Doing the sort of thing I just talked about.
But soon we will have an iron boot.
The number of SSA-affiliated organizations grew to 225 this year compared to 159 last year. And this has only been going on for a few years. So
that's significant.
Yeah, we're in the rapid rise category. By the way, I'm on the Speakers Bureau for Secular Student Alliance, and I'll pimp them out and encourage other groups, student groups, to affiliate with them. And I was doing this, irrespective of being on the Bureau, because I ran into, last night I was at the game store playing games, and out of the blue, somebody walked up and said, "Hey, man, love your show." It happens.
Cool.
It happens, but it happens more often in places like that.
Uh-huh.
And he goes to UT San Antonio and is active in their atheist group. And so we talked a little bit. And his group wasn't affiliated with Secular Student Alliance. And I don't think they were actually aware of it. So I let him know, you can do this affiliation. So here's, and we already know that when young people end up going off to college, the likelihood that they will abandon their previous indoctrinated religious beliefs is fairly high.
Yep. Yeah. Christians, you are right to be paranoid.
Yes. Because knowledge, or reason and faith are, in fact, enemies.
Yep.
So
as Martin Luther figured out.
Yeah. The number of student groups is on the rise, and that's encouraging. And by the way, I mentioned Dave Silverman a little while ago, who's the new president for American Atheist. And, of course, you've got Dan Barker is the head of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Then you've got Sean Faircloth, who's the head of the Secular Coalition for America. And there are many others. And there's an article that came out in Ms. Magazine that basically accused atheists or the modern atheist groups of being sexist, because this is a club for old white men. Because you've got Dawkins, Harris, Hitchens, etc. And they were basically asking, where's all the white women? But and Jen McCrae.
In fairness, we're going to ridicule and dismiss this. Three white guys sitting around a table.
Right.
And one white woman here who doesn't talk much, but
that's okay, because we're actually all benefiting from Beth's work, because none of us did a damn thing in preparation for today's show.
Exactly.
And Beth
Thank
sat
you,
down
Beth,
and
for
gathered
all the,
news items that we're talking about today.
Thank you, Beth.
Because she's just hot-buttered awesome. But anyway, Jen McCrate from Black Hag, who we adore, and who in her own right is a prominent
Fabulous.
Figure, prominent female figure. In the atheist community, wrote a response to that article, and I thought she did a great job. It's because I was like, what the hell are they talking about? Granted, I realize that there is a lot of atheist events tend to look like sausage fests.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily the case. The number of active women is not only seems to be increasing to me, But it's always been impressive because you have Madeline Murray O'Hare, who was the original, you know, queen bitch atheist who formed American Atheists. Our group, the Atheist Community of Austin, was founded by a woman.
Two-sevenths of the regulars on the TV show are women. And that's low, but it's higher than a lot of activism shows.
And, you know, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which, yes, Dan Barker is currently the president and spokesman of, but it was founded by Ann Gaylor and her daughter Annie Laurie. You had, after Madeline Murray O'Hare was president of American Atheists, after she died, Ellen Johnson took over and was president of American Atheists. After Ellen Johnson, there was a transitional period of a couple, and now we have Dave Silverman as the new president. But the vice president is also a woman. And Jen goes through and lists a lot of these because you've got the co-founder of Camp Quest was Helen Kagan. Liz Liddell is the director for organizing the Secular Student Alliance. I don't know. I think what it is that, and I've said before, there's obvious differences between the genders. It's absurd to try and claim there's not. And we see this a lot in the types of interests. And I think the reason you may be hearing more male voices is because, by and large, the likelihood that someone is willing to be vocal and argumentative and antagonistic about this increases if they're male, whereas the likelihood that they're actually going to do something, I think, increases if they're female, which is why these groups are founded by females, which is why that there are groups out there who are trying, women out there who are creating groups that, that are doing something productive, like Camp Quest, things like that. Would I want to see more women? I want to see more women everywhere. I mean, screw you guys.
We'll follow.
Here's the thing. I feel like we've had this same conversation with respect to not women, but black people and other minorities.
Yes.
How it's also true that that the atheist movement is more largely white, with a couple of very fortunate exceptions like Reggie, the infidel guy, and prominent people like that. And we've actually had a whole lot of black atheists call the show and offer their opinions and their frustration that there aren't more black people in the movement. And one of the things that one of the conclusions I've sort of drawn after a lot of these conversations is that if you're already in a historically oppressed group, and I'll put both blacks and women in that category, it's harder to, I mean, like, women already have to do extra work to make the same pay as men, for instance. It's just compounding the problem, multiplying, if you publicly identify with a group that is also stigmatized in some way, and you don't have to openly acknowledge your membership in there.
But I will say what's worse, or perhaps the worst, is when you let an irresponsible journalist do what happened with Ms. Magazine.
Yeah, it was horrible.
And write an article that is born of ignorance and potentially does harm. Because there are women out there who might be encouraged to become a part of these groups, and now they're dissuaded because they don't see any female influence in there. They don't see this. It was a horrible, horrible article.
My favorite part of the article, it says... And this was not included in Jen got to post a follow-up in Ms. Magazine, so it was a response to the original article.
That's cool.
But the one that she wrote on her own blog was longer and a lot more polemic and therefore more fun. And a paragraph she highlighted from the original article said, "The lack of lady presence is so visible that Conservapedia commented on it by noting that Dawkins' website overwhelmingly attracts male visitors."
Oh, wow.
A shock that Conservapedia looks for things to nitpick about the atheist experience.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not only that, but they went to not just Dawkins' website, which is going to attract fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not that everybody there is. I'm not disparaging everybody. But also, it's a posting forum, and those tend to be predominantly male.
On any subject.
Yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with atheism. I think that, you know, I'm going back to the thing where at least most of the women that I've interacted with are more interested in actually doing something than sitting around talking about it. So
that's good.
Good for them, and we need more of them to come in and do stuff like Beth did, gather all the news so we can sit around and talk about it. We're some lazy fuckers on this show.
Yes, I don't even have an intro.
Yeah. So in the fun news that was picked out for us, Spain's gays and lesbians are going to stage a kiss-in during the Pope's visit.
All right.
Spanish gays and lesbians will welcome Pope Benedict to their country at the weekend with a massive homosexual kiss-in to be staged in front of Barcelona's cathedral.
Cool.
Organizers have invited gays and lesbians from around Spain to congregate in Barcelona during the papal visit on Sunday to form what on their Facebook pages they call a queer kissing flash mob.
Oh, come on.
Which just sounds like so much fun.
the million man mosh. It's
like, that is pretty awesome.
And see, that's the thing is, you know, this is the type of thing that's just absolutely so offensive, and the world should be so offended by what the Catholic Church does. I have no inclination at all to kiss a guy, but if the Pope was coming to Austin and somebody staged a kiss in, I'd go down and make out with some dude just to piss him off. I mean, how could you not?
Yeah, really.
I'll kiss somebody's butt.
Oh,
you know,
what the heck?
Not, you know, not going to rim or anything, but.
Oh, God. All right, thank you for sharing.
Well, way over the top.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Also, good news, everyone.
Yes?
The touchdown Jesus statue that got struck by lightning.
Right. Yes.
Which you would think would be some kind of message, like, stop putting me in these stupid poses, if we took that religion stuff seriously. But that is being rebuilt.
Ah, well.
A new statue is in the works, one with a different look and name. Good idea, I guess.
Go!
The church has hired local sculptor Tom Tsuchiya and the company Glass Hand LLC to design and build the sculpture. The church is calling the statue Come Unto Me.
Their own little bukkake. Yeah, yeah, I
said
can see
unto,
it now.
Unto, not onto.
People with glass hands shouldn't cut stones.
It's a pretty big project. It's probably one of the biggest things we've ever done, said Steve Broch, owner of Glass Hand. We're trying to create a sculpture that appears dignified, said Tom Tsuchiya, unlike the last one where he was holding his hands up. And
unlike
you know,
the last
no,
one.
No, I added
oh,
that
oh, okay.
Sorry, that was me.
Whoa.
Yeah, the quote stopped and the editorial began. And
yeah,
was
I didn't notice that.
Sorry, I have a problem blurring lines between those.
So evidently they're putting a lightning suppression system into this one.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
What? So. You mean it takes some science to make sure that your religious idols
yeah,
are protected?
Don't get demolished. Yeah.
I think they should have a lightning attraction thing on the fingertips. That would look
awesome.
I
thought if you just stick something vaguely cross-shaped in any sculpture, then it will be the last thing standing when the building falls down. Isn't that just the way things
that's
work?
That's what we're led to understand.
I'm liking Dennis's idea. If you put like probes in each of the fingers, when lightning strikes it, you could snap a picture and it looks like Jesus is like shooting lightning bolts out at
yeah,
people.
Yeah, badass.
Hadouken!
And the other funny news bit from this week, a man dressed as Jesus has been kicked out of church. He's been dressing up as Jesus for like 20-some-odd years, running around to churches all over the country. And on two occasions, he's been kicked out. This is the latest occasion.
What are the grounds for kicking him out? I'm curious.
Well,
does he cause trouble?
Well, I mean,
no.
I'm wondering what he does. Yeah.
No, he just goes in and attends and sits there. His statement is, quote, "We're called to be ambassadors for Jesus Christ. Ambassadors should represent, and that's what I do. I try to represent my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ." He dresses up like Jesus every week for 22 years, going to a new church each week. And he's following what Jesus said. Take up your cross, your breastplate, and your staff, and follow Jesus' footsteps, and wear a white robe to show your sincerity, and that's what he's doing.
I don't know. Wow. Doesn't that come across to people potentially as, like, impersonating a police officer, that sort of thing?
Impersonating a supernatural character? Yeah.
And, you know, every Sunday is Halloween for him. So he tried to enter St. Paul's Lutheran Church. One of the deacons saw him and said, basically, can we help you? What do you want? And he said, I want to go to church here today. And he said, what do you believe? Are you a Christian? What religion are you? And he said, I'm a Christian. Now, hang on. Anybody else walks in off the street, they don't get stopped.
Right. First off, yeah.
And if the greeter is greeting somebody, they're never going to ask, what religion are you? Are you a Christian?
Right.
So the guy sees a guy dressed as Jesus and thinks, hey, we've got somebody who's getting ready to start trouble. I can understand it.
I can too, yeah.
And the guy's a bit of a nutter. So, you know.
And the church isn't a federal organization. So it doesn't, you know, they can profile all they want.
Sure. They can deny. And they can deny access, you know, except when it's a polling place.
Right.
So he says, well, the deacon told him he wasn't going to be allowed in the sanctuary. Church members told him he'd have to sit in the hallway. And he said, you know, this ain't right. You guys aren't treating me right. And then they said, we're going to call the police. And he said, call them. I don't care. And he sat down. The police showed up. They asked him to leave. They didn't file any charges or anything. As he left, he forgave them.
Jesus arrested.
Nice.
News at 11.
That's sweet.
He forgave them, yeah.
So, you know.
That's actually a beautiful little story.
I think maybe he shamed a Lutheran church by being more Christ-like than they were.
Uh-huh. I hope so. Well,
or at least
they probably don't get that. But
it's the fictional Christ-like that I'm talking about, which is, I guess, good if you're going to dress up like a fictional character. So, in the bad news category, something to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Whooping cough rates are going to beat the 1950 record in California. There have been 6,431 cases of whooping cough reported in California this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's less than 200 short of the 1950 record, which was at 6,600. Reports of new cases are coming in at 174 a week. Now,
what's going on?
Let's sit around and think about this. What could be going on that's increasing whooping cough?
Are the medicines suddenly not effective?
Well, they're not effective if you're a vaccination anti-vax denier who decides not to vaccinate your kids, thereby eliminating herd immunity for those who can't get the vaccinations. And that is, in fact, what seems to be happening, because a lot of the reported cases are coming from poverty-stricken areas.
Right.
Where you wouldn't expect them to have access to health care, and they may not be properly vaccinated, but they don't have they still benefit from the herd immunity from those who would have been vaccinated. So now you've got this anti-vax movement where their kids can get good health care, and so they're probably not going to die to whooping cough, although they might. They can afford the health care to get their kid taken care of. Meanwhile, their dickish ignorance has doomed some other kid to death.
Wow.
Let me just be absolutely blunt. In this day and age, in this society, with the advantages that we have, you have a moral obligation to get yourself vaccinated in order to benefit all of society. If you are a denier and you are basing it on the bullshit that has come out about, you know, mercury and autism and all this other crap, you are just, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I realize that people can be duped and that they have a distrust of science and medicine.
Yeah.
But this is not, you know, M theory. This is not dark matter. This is not something that's beyond the comprehension of average people. There are real doctors who have done real work.
Whose effects have been measured. And you know, studies of the immune system have been well-established science for a very long time now. And this, you know, what the reason that we're particularly irritated about this is because this is the sort of topic that when we bring it up, we get letters which begin with, "Hi, I love your show and everything you say, except..."
But, yeah.
And then we get a bunch of, you know, people coming in saying, "Oh, you just buy the official government story about how you should be vaccinated," yeah. And they're trying to kill us all. And it's like, don't even bother writing those kinds of letters because... You know, we're going to sick Jen on you, and you do not want that.
Yeah. Conspiracy theories do not grant you license.
It's just, it's one of those things that, I mean, it's a big issue. Jen is big on this issue. Beth's big on this issue. I have not been, you know, I don't think as vocal about it as I perhaps should have. I get frustrated at the number of conspiracy theory nonsense freaking emails that we get.
You know, there are a finite number of things that I can care about in great depth.
Yeah, and this one though, it's I don't know what else to say. I mean, there are groups that are doing great work. There are bloggers that are doing great work here. The JREF and others have put out. ORAC has done a lot to debunk the nonsense that goes along with the vaccination myths and vaccination. It's not even myth. It is in the case of Andrew. Is it Wakefield? Yeah. It is in the case of him. A knowing, intentional deception that has then carried on to other people and duped those who don't know any better. I don't know what else we can do. I mean, this is something where you got to keep educating people. But when you have people who, if they see it on the cover of a tabloid at the grocery store, or if it's mentioned on frickin' Oprah, will do anything that those guys say.
Yeah, they just uncritically accept it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's somebody on Oprah said that, you know, I should use a Thighmaster to prevent cervical cancer. I'm going to, you know, okay. Well, you're probably not going to do any harm with that particular treatment, you know. I mean, you might get a little... You know, joint problems or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, it feels good to believe in a meme which is popular, and yet part of the meme in itself is to say that it's subversive.
Well, reason tells you, you know, think critically, and religion tells you, no, don't think critically. It's there's definitely a push, a tug of war going on for hearts and minds.
Yeah. So I have exhausted my news items.
I think I'm about done. I don't care if we wrap it up.
We are coming up on the hour and a half mark, despite the fact that we're going to if we do it every other week, we'll do an hour and a half. If we get to where we're doing it every week, we'll convert to an hour.
I'm about halfway through the moral landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I'll finish it soon.
Cool. Then we can have a discussion about it.
Discussion. Yeah.
I'm being mauled by a kitty.
I know what you mean about, like, he's in your head, because it's the guy going, man, yeah, exactly.
By the way, talking about Christmas, I know you and Beth give a shit about Christmas, and I don't. but my chorus will be performing some Christmas carol crap that you might enjoy.
Cool.
So if in the month of December you are interested in coming to a concert, it's the sort of thing that might appeal to you.
Are they religious carols?
Some of them are.
You might be overestimating my enjoyment.
Okay. Well, that's good.
We will be having
But they will be well performed.
Well, in that case, it's not like I can't sit through and, you know, I get...
Also, we're doing Messiah, which is very religious, but also really good music.
Yeah, and I can't understand it, so... I have my limits. Like, Beth will... We listen to lots of different music, but occasionally we'll listen to some country music in the car, and there's lots of country music that I actually like, although it's not my prime category, but there's a bunch of it I like. But inevitably, if you're listening to country radio, there's somebody starts singing a song about Jesus, and it's just like, let me go back to, you know, AC/DC or something, Pink Floyd, let me switch it. So, yeah, and so what we're going to end up doing, our Christmas is going to be, you know, we're taking it back to its roots, baby. We're going to have
pagans.
We are going to have a relatively, almost entirely secular Christmas. Peppermint sticks and decorated trees and, you know, nothing at all religious about it, which I guess is my big, you know, like bazooka war on Christmas.
What? No dead guy pinned to a stick?
Yeah, there's going to be a bunch of atheists sitting around enjoying a holiday and giggling at the fact that somebody would be pissed off if they walked in to see it happening.
Yeah.
It's like, screw you guys. So, yeah, we're heading back to visit family, et cetera. So.
Cool.
All right. So, if I'm correct, the next show is on the 20th, which would be 2 weeks. There won't be one next week.
And
or maybe it's the 19th.
Is there a TV show next week? I don't think there is. I thought I saw on the schedule.
I don't know. Pull up the TV schedule. Because I'm planning on doing tomorrow's show. There wasn't a show last week, and it was another one of those. They give us 4 Sundays a month, and on a Sunday with a month with 5 Sundays, we have to special request the 5th Sunday, but we can only do it six days beforehand, so it's the day after we do a show.
11, 14, 10, studio closing.
All right, so there'll be a show this week, tomorrow.
Right.
There will not be a show on the 14th. Which is fine, because since we skipped past the announcements in order to get Leo on quick, we're now a week and a half away from my big debate at UMBC.
Ooh.
I'm doing some prep work and taking notes and preparing cards and doing the other stuff. I was informed the other day that the moderator for the debate is going to be John Shook from the Center for Inquiry.
Oh, fuck. Not him.
Yeah, well, see, when Catherine, Catherine sent me the note and she was like, you know, we were so worried. We weren't, you know, we were trying to get a moderator that everybody was happy with. And, you know, we got somebody from CFI. So, I mean, you know, technically the moderator is at least on our side of the debate, which I don't care about. I want a moderator that's going to be impartial, and I trust that John can do that.
Right.
Mm. On the other hand, I've been interested to meet him because he's part of the contingent of CFI folks who have been vocal dicks, I guess, about in their accommodationist leanings about calling the new atheist dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are destroying the secular movement from within, you know, type thing. And it's just...
Well, if I were you, I'd be prepared for a question in the end from him about that.
Well, we're debating the source of human morality.
Right.
So I don't necessarily know
it's not necessarily relevant.
Yeah, to what extent do you confront religious people, you know, about their police work? And it's nonsense in a sense, because I don't go door to door knocking... to see if, have you stopped believing in Jesus yet?
Right.
Yeah. I don't make outgoing calls on the show. I don't tie people to a chair and make them listen to the podcast, at least not usually. I don't force people to read the blog. It's very much we're putting the information out there, and the people who want to tune in and want to participate can. I'm already less in your face about it than the average religious person is. The average religious person is at least, you know, I sit down at stores and shops and restaurants around town, and you can hear conversations around you. And the number of times I hear people loudly and getting louder when they start talking about religion is shocking. And, okay, so we'll occasionally have conversations at the dinner table about religion as well.
Yeah.
Curiously. But then there'll be... If they overhear us, they will come over to our table and invite us to church.
Wow.
If I hear them talking behind me about, you know, how much the Lord has blessed them or punished their enemies, I don't get up and walk over and say, by the way, you guys do know that you're batshit crazy, right? I mean, who would do that? And yet that's the type of image that these accommodations are portraying. Now, I realize that I think some of them are looking at, for example, what's happening on blogs and forums where there's
bickering going on and saying, no, this isn't the best representation of us. But the people who think that this is that type of thing is what the new atheists, I love the fact that PZ spells it GNU because it's just nice. But yeah, it's complete misrepresentation.
Yeah, it's not new, and I get irritated when people ask about new atheists. Actually, I think it's especially funny when people call us and ask us what we think should be done about the new atheists, as if they're somehow distinct from what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
They should be listened to.
I mean, on the one hand, I don't know, because this is the thing I went back and forth. Well, I went forth with Phil Plait. I never got a back from him other than a backhand.
Yeah.
But it was, please tell us exactly what you're talking about. Please give examples. Who fits this fictitious mold that you're presenting? What are they doing? You know, give examples, because sometimes you'll see the new atheist labeled as, you know, Dawkins, Harris, Hitchens, etc.
Right. How dare they write books?
Yeah. I would definitely put myself in a category with them as far as attitude and you know, tactic and things like that. So if that's the category, then I'm in it. If the category is, you know, people who start fights on internet forums and call you, you know, an idiot right off the bat, then I'm not in that category.
Neither are they.
Right.
Yeah.
PZ Myers is.
Well, no, because what they're doing is they're looking at it and say, okay, look, we could be having a conversation about this and we could have a debate, and it would progress better if you went this way. But if you start off by saying you're an idiot, then you short-circuit your debate. I completely agree. And none of us start things off that way.
Right.
Inevitably, by the time I get to the point where I'm telling somebody that they're being an idiot about something or a moron about something, it's because we've attempted to have an intellectual debate, and they have been entirely dishonest in that debate and demonstrated that they have no interest in the truth and no interest in the discussion or the dialogue. They want to express their viewpoint, preach, and leave.
They have established that they're an idiot.
Right. Yes.
We absolutely do not call Christians or all people who disagree with us idiots. We call idiots idiots, though, and that bothers some people.
Yeah. I'm happy to call a spade a spade. And I mean that in the, you know,
the metaphorical sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're done. Are we?
Awesome.
Are we done? All right. So we'll be back on the 20th. There'll be a show, a TV show next week, but not the week after.
Next week being tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. Okay. Sorry.
All right, bye.
Gosh, there's just so much going on. I can't keep track of what day it is.
All right. Bye-bye.
Every day, so don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, 'cause you've got